Beyond 3D. Welcome to this week's edition of Beyond 3D. We sit down for a conversation with a great counselor, teacher, therapist, and founder of the Australian Close Encounter Research Network, Mary Rodwell. Sit back, relax. You're about to learn something.
Beyond 3D.
And I'd like to welcome you to Beyond 3D, Mary.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Oh, I'll tell you what, it's a pleasure to talk to you because of the immense background you have here. We're talking an author, a teacher, researcher, Reiki master, international speaker, and those are the kind of people that we love to get information from and see exactly how they're thinking these days and what's going on out there in the world. So it's an absolute pleasure to be able to talk to someone like you. So I'll start off with a brief background for our listeners about yourself, and then we can take it from there.
Well, I think most people are interested to know that I come from a very conventional background in terms of a former nurse midwife. Mm-hmm. But about 30-odd years ago, I got drawn into counseling as a profession, which was very new at the time, and working in a medical practice. That really led me into looking at healing from a whole new perspective, because, you know, what I learned was that instead of fixing illness, you know, you can actually help prevent it by, you know, giving people a chance to understand how emotional trauma and psychological trauma can cause illness, including stress. So it appealed to me to come from that perspective. And, of course, I've done all sorts of different types of counseling, from mm-hmm. relationship issues right through to grief and bereavement. You name it, I've more or less covered most of the range of human experiences. But what really changed the direction of my work was when I went into private practice, and my very first client that came through the door almost about 20 years ago now. And, you know, this gentleman, a middle-aged gentleman, very articulate, I thought very, very sound, said to me, "Look, you know, Mary, there are support groups for everything out there, but for this, there is no support groups because they just think you're crazy." And he proceeded to tell me about his experiences being taken up on spacecraft, seeing different beings. And what was even more significant was it wasn't just him in the family, it was his partner and the children waking up with marks on the body, shaved areas, this kind of thing, which for me in itself, although extraordinary, if you've got a whole family experiencing the same thing, then you've got to say, well, hold on a minute here. You can't put this down to fantasy, imagination, or psychosis. And that was, if you like, the most significant part of what started me on this journey. And from that time, of course, over 3,000 individuals have now contacted me from around the globe. You know, doctors, nurses, social workers, farmers, policemen, pilots, politicians, etc., right across the board, all belief systems, that are saying a similar thing, that they feel in some way they've had interaction with non-human intelligences.
The beauty of having a medical background is you will take that scientific standpoint and look at it firstly and see whether or not there's anything that you can physically ascertain. Let me ask you this then. Being that you said the first case was a family situation and all of these things were going on, I know a lot of work lately has been done with blood typing and everything like that. Did you go over that kind of situation with the family to see whether or not there was some kind of an Rh factor or something in the blood that would draw, I guess, so-called ETs to want to experiment or to look at this family at all?
Well, that wasn't my initial perspective. What initially I was looking at was whether or not there was some kind of psychological aberration. But what I have found, obviously, since, and Matt, you're obviously aware of it, there does seem to be intergenerational links. Mm. And this intergenerational line I follow through with, and there does seem to be something very important about blood types, particularly as you've highlighted, you know, Rh negative for whatever reason. And I suspect, you know, that this is an energy signature, if you like, that draws this experience to certain people. I'm not saying it's standard right across the board. There's so much we still don't know in terms of the medical side of this. And I'm hoping at some point, through my research and through a new organization that I belong to, that we can draw in some medical personnel that would be prepared to look at this from a medical science point of view.
Okay, yeah, it would make sense to be able to do something like that and really get into it. And I do understand as well the fact that if somebody comes to you, they will come to you in a confidence to say, well, this is what has been going on, because scientifically, yes, it is poo-pooed. It is something that is not talked about, or they're treated as if they have some sort of a psychological imbalance and that their experience is not valid. But at least for me, and from the work I've seen that you have done, is you have basically proven that what these people have gone through, their experiences are indeed valid, and they should be taken seriously. So it's good to know that there are people like yourself out there that are trying to help people who have these experiences explain what is going on and have them understand that there's a heck of a lot more going on than meets the eye as far as scientific circles are concerned.
I think it's very important, Matt, for me, was when I really came to the conclusion that these experiences were valid for people. And you know, what the misconception is that a lot of people, you know, are saying this for some kind of attention or whatever. And it's an absolute nonsense, because most of those that have experiences are probably the most skeptical of all. Because they're skeptical, because they want to be absolutely certain they're not crazy, and would actually prefer a more standard kind of understanding than, you know, they're being taken up onto spacecraft and interacting with extraterrestrials. Because, you know, some of my clients are scientists. Right. They're academics, you know, they're psychologists. You know, they would much rather have a conventional explanation or a psychological explanation for this. So this isn't attention-seeking people. These are people who are not looking for some kind of notoriety. In fact, that's the last thing that they want. They just seek to understand what the hell is going on, because this is affecting them profoundly on many levels.
Now, one of those levels, it's really interesting, especially when you talk about it's professionals, especially in the scientific community. And the way I used to describe it, and you can agree or not, is it's you go through schooling and you do a lot of work over a period of years, and then all of a sudden you are confronted with something that is totally outside of that compartmentalization and the things that you have learned. And that in and of itself is extremely confronting, because there's no way for you to explain it.
That is actually why it's so much more difficult for those who I call very left-brained programmed or conditioned.
Yeah.
And higher education and that kind of conditioning or scientific training makes it even more difficult for those, as you say, to accept or to even explore this. And a number of those that have come from the scientific side, I find that they really struggle through the process of accepting that this is going to challenge everything they've ever believed from their scientific training. And so they struggle more than what I would call, you know, the average Joe in the street.
Mm-hmm. But it would make sense, quite frankly, because of all of the information that they have gathered over the years. They, you know, especially if a person has a PhD or something along those lines, they specialize in an area. And they're confronted with something that is totally outside of everything that they have come to know. And so, yeah, that would be a difficult situation for people to deal with.
One of the reasons I wrote the book Awakening was actually as a therapeutic process to give people a way of working through honoring their experiences and understanding, you know, am I really crazy? How do I know I'm not? You know, sleep trust, what's that? You know, implants, what are those? You know, what kind of beings are there out there? How do I know it's me? And so going through a process where they can start to create a new baseline for their reality, so that, you know, through that process they can come into an acceptance and then start seeking more understanding, is really what everyone has to do who comes and accepts that, you know, that this is going on, this extraordinary experience. And part of it is just that integration of saying, well, you know what, if it's true, then this is what it's saying to me. And that process can, for some people, be very fast. And other people, it may take them a number of years to come to that point of acceptance that this is a reality.
Hmm. Now, have you done a lot of work with kids, children?
Yes, and that actually, for me, is an exciting and very fascinating part of my work, is that you've got children, many of them under 10, that are explaining to their parents what they understand about their encounters, and they, many of them, this is all conscious recall, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, I don't use hypnosis with any of the children at all, but they will be saying things to their parents about going up on craft, what they learn on the craft, what other types of beings they see, their connection to them. They will also, many of them seem to have recall of other, you know, other past lives on other planets. And, you know, when I say that the reason I give this a great deal of credibility, there's two things that come to mind. One is, this is not, you know, children don't watch talk shows.
Right.
They don't read books on this. And yet they're coming out with such concepts as energy fields, wormholes, black holes that they're taught about on the craft, and learning to use their consciousness to create things, to levitate things, for example. Now, these are, you know, I've got three adult children. I've got four grandchildren. Now, I can assure you, these are not concepts that I ever heard from my children or my grandchildren.
Interesting. I guess it depends on the people you grow up and you're around. And as you say, if they're attracted to certain blood types or if they're attracted to certain families, it would make sense. But as far as the kids are concerned, it's very interesting. I'll just relate it from experience as far as I know. When I was probably about 6 or 7 years old, something happened where I was in a bedroom. My brother and I shared a room, and I woke up at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I turned around, and there was a being standing in the room, and it wouldn't go away. And so as a kid, you get scared, you turn back, and then you turn and look again. It was still there. And then you turn around, and you wait for what seems like an eternity, and then you turn around, and it is gone. I think a lot of kids see on that clairvoyant level. They can see many different kinds of beings and orders of beings. So it would be interesting working with the kids to see exactly what the kids see, because as you said, they're not really media savvy. So what they will do is give you their experience, and there's no attachments to it. It is what it is. So that would be interesting working with the kids and seeing exactly what they're telling you.
It's a clarity that they have, because, as you say, they're not conditioned or programmed into a particular belief system at that point. And so, you know, when they describe their experiences at 4 or 5 years old about how they understand, for example, a craft has an energy field. Now, what child at four and a half or five knows about energy fields, for example? And they will say they'll see colors around people. And some of it, they may see the beings literally clairvoyantly, but other times they will actually see them physically as well. So, you know, I've questioned and asked them and say, well, is it with your eyes you can see them, or do you see them in your mind's eye? And they'll say, well, both.
Yeah.
So they're quite clear about how they will perceive these different beings that they're interacting with.
The different forms of kids now, we had the indigo kids coming through, and then the crystal kids. They're described as the beings that are basically taking birth on the earth at this point in time. And you mentioned earlier, which was very interesting, it's the souls and living on different planets. The way I've written it down here when I was coming to this, if you have we'll get into the spiritual stuff aspect, you have the monad, and then you have your higher self. Now, when you go from that aspect, I would always think, and this was from childhood growing through it because I did a lot of spiritual work as well, and I would say, well, if I were a monad, if I were that divine spark, why would I simply attach myself to one soul? It's almost like having a business. You can be a sole proprietor, or you could hire a whole lot of people and send them around to different cities, and they can then check in with you like you're the hub, and they can report back to you what's going on. So I tend to look at it that way. You have a monad, you have a higher self, and you have different souls. But the monad can have 4 or 5 different higher selves with a soul attached to each one, and the information can exchange, go back and forth. So I'm really just trying to understand whether or not you've found in your research, has anything like that really occurred, or have you met anyone who has basically described it in that way?
I found it really interesting. I'm very familiar with Dr. Newton's work and the monads and journey of souls. And because I work with past lives, in between lives, in a similar way with my regression work and what have you, I come across this kind of thing quite frequently. And my understanding is the soul doesn't just operate in one particular field or experience. It may very well be operating in other universes, other parallel realities, other planets, an aspect of the soul, as I call it. I hold up my hand and I sort of say the palm of the hand is the soul, but the fingers are different aspects of the soul that are operating in different energies, different frequencies, different forms or whatever, as a way of explaining how I understand it. And what's interesting is that, you know, you mentioned the indigos, the crystals. I call them all star seeds or star kids. I think that they're different programs. The indigos have got a different mandate to the crystals, but I also mention in my recent presentations something called the letter people, or the programs, the new programs coming in, which we are diagnosing as dysfunctional, and these are ADHD, Asperger's, sometimes autism, dyslexia. And a scientist that I'm working with in from Sweden, who also calls herself a letter person, she's a scientist experiencer. And the way that she explains these programs, such as ADHD, Asperger's, as letter people, she says that she doesn't believe they're broken genes, but offering a new multidimensional skill to prevent limited reprogramming of a third-dimensional reality. And she said it's not so simple as foreign DNA. It's a combination of genetically improved bodies in combination with souls from different places in the universe, incarnating in these improved bodies. And the souls have different frequencies and vibrations depending on their evolutionary status, and that plays a role in activation of the DNA in that particular body. And also we have to take into account the collective soul of Homo sapiens. So there's a lot more going on, I think, than we are aware of consciously in how we as a species, I think, are evolving at this moment in time.
I just wanted to applaud you, Mary. I think the work you're doing in the global community is absolutely sensational, and I'm sure it's a long way away from when you first went to university to set yourself down this path, that you're a million miles away from where you envisaged you would be at this point in your life.
I make a joke about that, Clint, and I say that 40 years ago, if you'd said when I was a nurse midwife that one day I'd be travelling the world talking about aliens, I'd have sent you to the nearest psychiatrist. So I've come a long way since then.
I'm sure you have. I do have a question, and I apologise for being late for this interview. So I'd like to thank Matt for all his hard work in talking to you. That's awesome. My question is, what, if anything, what is that one thing that keeps you up at night?
Oh, the main thing is that I think I was born very nosy, and I've always wanted to know about the mysteries of life. I've always wanted to know what this is all about. Why are we here? All those big, deep questions, right from a little girl. And I feel like I've got this huge jigsaw that I'm trying to find bits to fit it to make sense of what the bloody hell we're doing down here as a soul, and what's the meaning of it, and if I'm doing anything good at all or not good, you know, this kind of thing. So that's what drives me is, and every time I get a little bit piece of that jigsaw, I am the most happiest person in the world. That's because I think, right, now I've got this bit, now I want to know a bit about that. So it's almost like that's what drives me. But also what drives me is that, you know, we're living in the biggest thing that's happening on this planet at the moment is discrimination against personal reality. And that is what's limiting us, I believe, from evolving. And for me, to be able to put out information that gives people, if you like, confidence to own who they really are, to me is the most important thing of all. Because once we get it, I think there's no stopping us. I mean, this 9-year-old said to me, human beings are the most amazing creatures you can possibly imagine. But she said they've got to believe it first. And and this is what I think has got to happen. We've got to believe in ourselves and believe and understand what we're capable of, and this is the start, isn't it? Is just opening up to possibilities.
That's fantastic. And I was driving into the studio here contemplating what it was I was going to speak to you about, and I put myself in your shoes and I thought to myself, if I was you in the early days, I'd have people coming to me for help, people walking in the door with tiny little jigsaw pieces. So it's interesting that you brought that up, because I was actually thinking about that. People bringing in little tiny pieces of jigsaw, that you have no idea how big that jigsaw is. But what happens is you get different, you spend time with different people, and I'm sure, tell me if I'm right or wrong, one every now and again, somebody might bring up a jigsaw piece that fits with a piece that you discovered about a year ago or a month ago or a week ago?
Look, this is the more that you go down the rabbit hole, I mean, you know, the less you know, the less you realise you don't know. And that's the fascinating thing is, okay, so I you know, what is this now that I'm looking at? Because it morphs and it changes as information comes in. But what is brilliant is if you've got something that somebody's told you maybe 10 years ago or 5 years ago, and you're still seeking to see whether that's worth listening to or validating in that little box you put it. and something comes along that actually matches that perfectly from another field of knowledge, and you go, right, brilliant, now I've got that to qualify that. And one of the things that I've tried to do, because I think it's so important, is that we have our analytical, logical side and our scientific side that wants to understand it from the 3D world, but we also want to understand our multidimensional side. So if you can marry the two, and this is what I've tried to do with all my presentations, if I'm talking about one particular scientific fact, I'm then looking at what the experiencer may say that may marry with that, even if the language is different, or if someone's saying it from, you know, what they understand about the ETs or whatever it is, and then I get validation from science that says, well, actually, this can work this way. This is actually saying this. Then you've got it. You've got something really you can work with that helps you to understand, what is this matrix? What are we creating? Is it a virtual reality? You know, are we all co-creators of this little trip down to Earth and giving ourselves a really good ride? It can be all of that, can't it?
Absolutely, it can. And I have friends that I call them the bubble people. So they do their 9-to-5 jobs and they come home and they go to sleep and they get up the next day and they go do the 9-to-5 jobs, and that's their bubble, that's their reality. And to take them out of that bubble and to have a 5-minute conversation with them about parallel universes, extra dimensions, beings on that exist on a higher plane, they don't have the ability to conceive, to make that leap. Yeah, I find there's a definite leap between experiences and people that, you know, that they see something mentioned on the 5 o'clock news, 7 o'clock news at night, the last story on the news, and it's made a joke. So I'm wondering, Mary, do you think in your lifetime you'll ever see it? I mean, in our circles, we take it serious, but in mainstream, do you ever see it? Average Joe down the street having a conversation with another average Joe down the street about this subject?
I actually do.
Yep.
And the reason I'm saying that is that I'm getting a lot of professionals now that are risking coming out of the space closet, as I call it, and actually owning that, you know, what's been driving them or what's giving them information about new technologies or healing technologies or whatever is actually what has been downloaded or given to them by various beings, whether it's light beings, blue beings, cat beings or whatever it is, are actually coming out and saying that. And I'm writing as, you know, I'm presenting a scientist actually in and I did do in Nexus, her story, which is, you know, all her scientific credentials and, oh, by the way, she interacts with 12 different beings. She's had healings from the cone heads and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think disclosure is going to come from the ground up. I don't think it's going to come from the top. They drip feed a whole lot of stuff, but I think primarily it's about us to start saying, and you know, it's just giving people enough confidence and backup for them to be able to feel safe enough to come out and say, look, this is my experience. And I think this is what, you know, I'm hoping organizations like Free, for example, are going to start to do is to support that and what have you. But I tell you, the other reason I believe it's going to happen sooner rather than later, when you have a 9-year-old telling you that there's going to be major changes or event or something that's going to occur, and this 9-year-old was explaining the process was going to be from 2012 to 2017, and many others around the globe have said to me, something is, you know, something's ahead, and it's sooner rather than later that's going to shift consciousness, then to me, you know, I listen to that. When enough people are getting that sense, then you listen to it. Some call it an event, some call it a consciousness shift. I've had little children of 4 and 5 explaining to the one, she was from Turkey, she was not quite 5 years old, drawing a planet, writing a script and telling her mother, that's the new Earth. And her mother said, well, what do you mean the new Earth? She said to her daughter, you know, can you tell me more about it? And the daughter said, no, because it's a secret. I had a five-year-old talk about the new Earth in Sydney to her father and explain about the new Earth and what that was meaning to us as a shift in consciousness. A 7-year-old telling me how it's going to occur. Now, these are kids that those concepts, you know, are not something they're reading about, but they're explaining that they know about this new Earth, whatever this new Earth is, whether it's us shifting to another frequency or whatever it is, I don't know. But I feel it's sooner, to be honest, rather than later. And this is why I think there's this drip feeding going on right now with various governments and what have you, and scientists. I just think that it is a preparation, and I'm certain it's sooner rather than later.
Mary, I agree with you. Everything we're seeing and we're experiencing, it's saying the exact same thing. So we're on board with that 100%.
Beyond.
It's interesting insofar as, so if you were to take a child that has autistic tendencies, if you look at it from a soul aspect, could it be something, and if I'm wrong, just please tell me, here in this plane of existence, in this dimensional earth, that is what they are going through, that is what the body is going through. It's almost as in, it's almost like it's in repose, but on another dimensional plane, that soul can be active and learning and doing what it needs to do. Is it something along those lines?
Absolutely. I read a book many years ago called A Child of Eternity, and it was about an autistic child whose mother honestly believed the child was in some way mentally incapable because of the reactions and the ways that her daughter was behaving. And it wasn't till some new strategies and techniques came in when the child was about 8, where they found that they could work with some autistic children via the computer. And with assisted help, this child then, through the computer and with assisted help, actually demonstrated high intelligence. And she started to communicate with her mother. She had, you know, the mother had no idea how intelligent her daughter was. And one of the interesting things her daughter came out and said when she was still only about 8 or 9 on the computer, that she as a soul had chosen to be autistic. And her mother, and what she said was, I limited the nutrients when I was a fetus so that I would be born autistic, because then I was forced to go and explore my inner world that way and experience from that perspective. So it was a soul choosing a particular set of circumstances for their growth and their understanding. And this was totally profound to the mother, who couldn't believe that this 9-year-old autistic child is explaining her soul journey.
Well, this is the thing. We're here. We're interacting in this world. And so a lot of people, most of the people on the planet right now, don't necessarily deal with the inner worlds because there's so much to deal with in the so-called outer world or the mundane world. So that would make sense as well, that if you get a soul or an advanced soul that has work to do and they need to do the work on the inner world but took birth, put the body into stasis, as so to speak, and explore the inner worlds and things like that. Now, for you yourself, how about your experiences? Have you had any inner world experiences? I mean, you've done Reiki, you're a Reiki practitioner. How has that affected you insofar as the energies that has brought in for you? How has that enhanced your life?
It's a very good question, and a lot of I often get asked, you know, just where are you in all of this, you know? I feel I've gone through the same process as the experiencer, in a different way, because I've wanted to prove to myself that whatever's going on here is a reality, and for that you have to look at everything from, you know, our genetic makeup and the anomalies in our DNA right through to our anthropological and archaeological history, when you start looking at who the gods were, for example. You start looking at your belief systems, you know, from your understanding of the spiritual concepts and metaphysics, and of course by working with past lives and in between lives, when the subconscious is coming out with all this profound information, you cannot help but be touched by that. I have done a little bit of work and, you know, explored a few of my own past lives as a way of opening myself up. Mm-hmm. But I also, it isn't something that, that when you start exploring healing or energy work or whatever, that opens you up on another level as well. Multidimensionally, you start to sense more, you start to notice synchronicities, you start to feel and sense other things, presences and this kind of thing, which is part of what you do when you're doing healing. Mm-hmm. When you're working with those energies, you can often feel you're being supported by the non-physical, I call it my non-physical team, that seem to give me insights and assist me with insights and this kind of work. So I've been working from that level also when there are things hard to understand from a conscious analytical side. I will then see if I can access that through, you know, putting out okay, I need information on X, Y, and Z. And isn't it interesting how synchronicities, you know, become more and more valid to you when you start to, you know, trust that there's another part of you working in the non-physical realm, helping you to find answers, helping you, whether you call that your higher self or your superconscious, whether you call it guides, angels, or, you know, whatever. It really doesn't matter. The, you know, I say to people, you know, for one person, when they feel they're connecting to maybe the angelic realm, or others will call those light beings or whatever. Mm-hmm. It really is only the lens that you choose to understand your multidimensional self. We all have it. We often get it shut down through our conditioning, our programming. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that many people with encounters, you know, get a sense of what's going on is when they start to listen to that side of themselves, because they have downloads. You know, they have knowledge bombs, in, as one eight-year-old called it, where they just start to know things, and they will, everything from physics to the origin of the species, they will suddenly have this knowing that this is the truth. Mm-hmm. And this is what I ask them to start, you know, going with, because if they're given that information, it's for them to help them understand what's going on, and maybe they're part in it, because many people who have these experiences have this sense of mission and purpose. They've come here with something to do. And they will say, you know, that, and a lot of them, you know, feel they've come to help with either, you know, awakening the planet, as this nine-year-old told me her job was to help her family wake up, mm-hmm. but also told me that some of the languages that she speaks, which I call star languages, she said one of those languages helps to heal water, that she said the frequency of that language actually purifies water. So we've got these amazing children coming in. They accept this as their non-physical reality. For me, I've seen evidence for myself that, you know, when I put that information and saying, well, look, you know, I need to understand this on some level, I will find the synchronicities will provide that for me, or just get a sense of something. And I, when I follow it through, I see it has validity. So, yes, I do work from that perspective, and it's been very valuable for me, because most people that come to me are intuitive, are psychic, if you like, mm-hmm. and for them to have someone who will listen and honor that experience that's been profound for them is extremely important. We've really got to change the psychological model that says, you know, if you get insights like this, you're not going round the bend, you're not crazy, and for goodness sake, you know, that really has to change.
Oh, I thoroughly agree with you at that aspect. It's just amazing to me. We are given this information, and I just think that there are some people that are in positions of authority that know this, but they don't want it to get out. Maybe it's a control mechanism.
Yeah.
Because of, you know, they need to keep people hungry and working in status quo kind of a situation. But a lot of people lately have really started to get those inner messages. And it's good to have people that they can go to interpret what's going on, or and they're not going to just, as you say, poo-poo it, or as I say, poo-poo it, and basically shun them, and people will then close down. Quick example, it happens all the time. I was listening to a radio program about a month ago, and there was a meteor that shot through the sky here. A person called and said, did anyone else see this? And a few people called the radio station, and they all said, I did see that. I didn't want to say anything because I thought people would think I was insane or something like that. But now that someone else has said that, I can call in and say that I did see the same thing. They're looking for just, and sometimes maybe just one other person that will acknowledge something a little bit out of the ordinary, and that will allow them to open up and really start to explore what's going on in the inner world. So what I want to ask you is, with all of the people that you have helped, with all of the people that you have seen, counseled, and things along those lines, you must have a pretty good picture of a lot of these inner worlds. I wanted to know, from your perspective, what was the most fascinating inner world experience that one of the people you work with has told you?
Well, I have lots of similar stories and accounts of what people, well, finally, as you're quite right, once you give permission to somebody to say whatever really is going on for them, it's mm-hmm. amazing what they'll tell you.
Right.
And how they'll understand so many things or sense so many things about themselves that they've never told anyone before. Because of that judgment that, you know, are they going to think I'm crazy? Well, they soon when they come to see me realize, and also because of my presentations, they realize that I'm open to whatever right. they choose to tell me or experience.
Hmm.
And that goes everything from them in regressions, in hypnosis, where they may experience being aware of a parallel life or experience a life on other planets, in past lives, for example,
mm-hmm.
or understand a little bit more of the beings that they call family, that they have incarnated in human form because they've got a job to do here, that they've agreed with their star family. Lots and lots of people will tell me this. I have hundreds of people that have found themselves doing strange scripts, strange symbols, artwork, coming out with the languages. I was doing a presentation, and I deliberately play the languages, for example, or show the scripts in every presentation, because that is an aspect that a lot of people won't admit to.
Mm-hmm.
To give you a really interesting recent example of that was I was, you know, talking to a farmer. Now, farmers are really very, very careful about what they
yes.
talk about, because, you know, they're considered very down-to-earth, very grounded. And this was him and his son had seen a lot of craft,
mm-hmm.
and he had been in deep conflict. He's in his 50s now, and he, you know, when he finally connected with me, he started to tell me a little bit, but was very, very wary about different things. And I started to say, you know, some people speak languages, they don't know where it comes from. And he said, he immediately, spontaneously said, "Mary, I can do that." And I actually said, "Well, would you like to do it now?" And he came out with this language, and then I played him some of the other languages, and he burst into tears. He was so moved by it.
Mm.
What he didn't know, though, was when I ended up connecting to his son, who actually is autistic. And his son had seen craft, and I talked to his son. His son started to tell me about a planet that he was making, he said was a story. When I realized, when he started to tell me about this planet, the deep detail was so incredible from him, you know, who was an autistic 20-year-old. What was fascinating was that this information was so detailed. I said, it's not just imagination, is it? I said to him, and he said, "Well, no, it's what I remember." And then I said to him, did you hear any of the languages on this DVD that I produced, Expressions of ET Contact? And he said, "I recognize one of them, and I know the one it is. It's by Tracy Taylor." And he said, "I recognize that one." And I said, "Can you speak it?" And he immediately spoke the same language as Tracy Taylor did on the DVD. And his father looked at him in absolute amazement and
wow.
didn't know his son could speak it even. And his son didn't know his father was speaking one of these languages as well. So it was the first time they both realized that they were doing the same thing. And it was, it was absolute shock for both of them, because it had been something they'd never even told one another. Even though they'd seen craft together and all the rest of it, they hadn't actually shared with one another that this was something else that was going on. And his father had no idea that his son was talking about this story about these planets that he was writing and was being helped with was actually a reality, that it wasn't just a story. It was actually part of what he remembered.
That's the interesting thing. You get the synchronicity and you get validation, in a sense, from people, and that's what makes it all worthwhile. But the other thing is, there's so much more out there, and we don't embrace it. And if we don't embrace it, that's why we stay as we are now. And more and more people are actually coming out with this stuff. I really believe that we're in a time now where we have to move forward. We're evolving in spite of ourselves. So we have to continually go forward with this, and we're getting the clues from within, so to speak. So we have to be able and willing to listen to those clues. So that's fantastic.
Well, what I'm trying to do more than anything is, when you talk about this and the more cutting edge types of experiences that a lot of people may struggle to admit themselves, is that by putting it out there and normalizing it and saying, look, there are other people that do this, and, you know, they're all ages and different professions and what have you, then it's amazing. It's almost like it gives people permission to say, you know, oh, maybe I'm okay after all,
mm-hmm.
and then they will admit it to me. So it's very important, I think, that we talk about more of the multidimensional side of this experience, and not just the nuts and bolts. So, you know, what type was the craft, and who saw it with you, and have you got a picture, which is all the nuts and bolts of ufology that has been going on for you know, 60, 70 years as a way of getting credibility for this, you know, what hasn't been acknowledged is the multidimensional side of this experience in the same way. It's considered not tangible or scientific enough. And this is why, you know, I'm part of a new organization where we are looking at this scientifically and academically and therapeutically as a way of validating a new model of understanding these experiences. So it's not just the nuts and bolts we're looking at, although that's still important. What we're doing is saying people have near-death experiences and then we'll start to see ETs or out-of-body experiences or understand themselves to be walk-ins or they understand themselves to be hybrids, for example. All of this is part of the inclusive nature of looking at this from a human consciousness level, and that it isn't just extraterrestrial either. We're talking about interdimensionals, extra-dimensionals, ultra-dimensionals, maybe visitors from our future. So the whole gamut of how people interpret their experiences is part of what we need to start exploring so that we can look at this from a, whether it's the quantum hologram from science or we're looking at it from an academic way of creating a new psychological model of human experience.
Mary, what is the new organization you're working with?
It's the Dr. Edgar Mitchell Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters, and it's called FREE. And it's only being created. I'm one of the co-founders. And the whole idea is, I mean, we've got someone, apart from Dr. Edgar Mitchell himself, who most people will know is the sixth man to walk on the moon and created his own consciousness institutes. He's agreed to be, if you like, the founding head. But we have Dr. Rudy Shield, who is an astrophysicist, who looks at this from the quantum hologram. Dr. Klimo is a professor of for over 40 years in the fields of transpersonal psychology and parapsychology, published many academic articles and books on the topics. Dr. Leo Sprinkle, he's also a retired professor of psychology. They're the ones creating a new, if you like, a new model through all the questionnaires that we're doing. We've already done one survey, which was nearly about 1,500 have responded to that. And one of the fascinating things is that we've already discovered is for most people, or, you know, a high percentage, it's been a positive experience. There's only been, as I found with my own research with ACERN, only about 25% see it as abductions or fearful. The rest of them have actually found it as a very positive, enlightening, transformative experience. So these are some of the results that we're getting with the first Survey Monkey, which was, let's say, about 1,500 individuals. We've got the second one now that looks at the more of the multidimensional experiences with it, and we're going to expand on that. And it's the first time any organization in this field and with this phenomena has got not only the numbers, but has the credentials to assess what is actually going on and create the types of questionnaires that will give us insight into this. And then the science arm is those looking at the downloads of physics that many individuals have through their experiences so that we can assess the validity of the information that they're accessing through their contacts, which is wonderful that we have several physicists that are actually doing that. So, you know, it's getting not only, you know, people with the skills to help us understand it and research it, but also having the open-mindedness to look at all the data and not dismiss it just because it's challenging to our present paradigm.
So what you've gotten is you've got a group of people together from a scientific community, credentialed people that are coming up with surveys and asking proper questions of people and getting this information, therefore collating it, and you're building up an organization that has numbers to back up all of this evidence. That's really fantastic.
Oh, look, it's time. But, you know, the trouble has been, I believe, that, you know, much as we've been so desperate to get the scientific validation through the nuts and bolts side of this, you know, looking at implants with Dr. Roger Lear, for example, and all his work, and looking at it from, you know, traces afterwards, after a craft may have landed, for example, all these kinds of things. But we have ignored the most incredible aspect of this, which, because it's much harder to explore in traditional ways, has been discounted. And yet there's a whole range of what I call multidimensional experiences, from healing, spontaneous healing from these experiences, time distortions. You've got, you know, the altered and enhanced senses after these experiences, where somebody will say, I had this missing time, and when I came back again, I could sense things I'd never sensed before. You know, even the feelings and emotions of people around me were enhanced. And, you know, they had found that they had shifted their perceptions in incredible kinds of ways. And also, and this has always been a bit of my particular boat, if you like, is you don't start writing strange scripts and coming out with, you know, unusual languages and geometric art and start doing sculptures of ETs, you know, after a hallucination. You know, this is evidence of a reality, even if it's not so easily translatable into the nuts and bolts side of ufological research. This is evidence from a therapeutic point of view that something profound has happened to that individual, and that is as much evidence in my book as if they bought a piece of the craft.
Look, I'm going to leave it there for now, because quite frankly, after you saying that, I can go on for hours. It's just the way it is, but I'm going to, so I will say, well, it is very interesting to talk to you. I hope we'll be able to do it again down the track as we build this network to be able to help people in the Southern Hemisphere understand what's going on worldwide around ufology, around paranormal activity, around esoteric teachings, per se. So with that, I'm going to leave it there, and I'm going to thank you again for all of your insights, and we at Beyond 3D would love to have you come back on the show again anytime you'd like, when you have information that you think is pertinent and needs to get out there, because we will do our best to make sure that we get that information out to the listening public. So, Mary Rodwell, we thank you for appearing on Beyond 3D.
It's an absolute pleasure, and anytime.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
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 Beyond 3D.
We would like to thank Mary Rodwell for her insights on this week's show. You'll want to tune in next week. Beyond 3D is going a little bit further than we normally would. Clear to the United States of America for an interview with one of the best researchers out there, Robert W. Sullivan IV. You will be intrigued with the information he has to offer. Until then, keep looking up. You never know what you'll see out there.
Just because you haven't experienced it, doesn't mean it doesn't exist.